As iron sharpens iron, so does one man sharpen another. A friend can show you the way to a better you, but sometimes so can a rival. The Canadian wilderness is a field for an eternal game of cat and hare, an arms race of snowmanship and speed on unsteady ground. The lynx and the hare are locked in a chase that has molded both of their bodies into machines built for a frigid life, death, and taxonomy. Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate, just visit patreon.com/LDTaxonomy or click on donate on our website at LDTaxonomy.com.
And today we're talking about a cool Canadian cat, but more on that later.
It is a very cool cat.
Yeah, especially because it, you know, it lives in a cool place. Temperature-wise.
Temperature-wise, yeah. Oh, we're going to alienate a lot of people that
every time we say something
Canadian.
Bad about Canada,
our viewership
goes
down.
We have a lot of... Our viewership is... The silent minority or the loud minority is Canadian on our podcast.
A lot of Canadians. Yeah, they get to make fun of our French, which is fine. Make fun of my French all you want. It's not very good. But this is the Canadian lynx. It's a lynx. You owe me a soda. It's also known as the Grey Lynx or the Northern Lynx. I don't know if there are Southern Lynxes. Cold weather cat. But we're going to call it here Harry Gotter.
Oh, and he like literally just got?
They get him. They got the hairs.
Okay.
I don't believe it. You got the hair? That's a deep cut reference.
I don't know that.
That's Rosie O'Donnell's line in Tarzan.
Great.
The Disney movie I watched the most as a kid. So, Harry Gotter, which goes with Harry Potter, and then Legolas is more.
Great.
Yeah, let's. Slap some taxonomy on this bad boy. It's in a kingdom you know, love, and are in. That's Animalia, of course. It always is. The phylum is Chordata. The class Mammalia. The order Carnivora. We're on the cat train. And man, my allergies are acting up. The suborder is Feliforma. The family is Felidae. So it's deep in cat town. It's jellical up in here.
Cat town.
The genus is Lynx and the species is Canadensis. So if you thought, so the binomial nomenclature is Lynx Canadensis. But if you thought that you were going to get off easy with some nitty gritty nomenclature, I'm happy to report that there is a collective noun for lynxes. Links. Yeah, I think it's just links. So it's time for my favorite part of the show and the listener's favorite part of the show. Critter groups. The part of the show where I ask you, Joe, a question, and that is, what is the name of the for a group of this animal, or what is the term of venery, or what is the collective noun? If you saw a group of lynx, you would be A, extremely fortunate, because it's hard to find these guys. And they don't like to hang out in groups. But B, what would you call it? Would you say it's A copse of lynx? B, a chain of lynx? C, a cabal of lynx? Or D, a cadre of lynx.
Oh, I like a cadre of lynx, but a chain of lynx is funny. What was the first one?
I missed the first one.
The cops of lynx? I'm going to go with cadre just because I like that word. Final answer.
I like that word too, which is why I put it in there. The answer is chain. It's a chain of links.
Oh,
nice?
According to who?
Oh, well.
I do like it though.
I will. Okay. I will tell you according to who. Animalsinenglish.com.
Seems legit.
They don't really get together in groups. So, in those situations, it's actually rare to find an animal that has a collective noun when they don't get together in groups like that. They're not very gregarious. But I was happy to see that there was a little bit of a play on words there. You don't want to be the weakest links in the chain. Let's talk about what the Canadian lynx looks like, though. It looks like someone took a house cat, used the zoom in enhance feature from the 90s, and then upgraded it for the snow level in the DLC. Because there's always a snow level in the DLC. Why do they keep doing that? It has this thick plush fur that ranges from silvery gray to like a frosted tip brown, depending on the season, with a lighter underbelly, so a bit of counter shading there. It has these huge, big paws. It's supposed to be like snowshoes. Canadian lynx spends a lot of its time in deep snow. So yes, it has like these big mittens that distribute its weight across the snow so it doesn't sink in.
I'm understanding one of the nicknames.
Yes, Legolas. There it is. Legolas is the better than everyone else Mirkwood elf that gets to walk on the snow while everyone else is chest deep in the Caradhras.
in the coterie.
And he's not even helping. Everyone else is like carrying hobbits or axes and stuff like that. Carry something, Legolas. If everyone else is going to be struggling.
If he weighed one more ounce, he'd be in the snow.
he would fall off the mountain. That's the thing about elves. They weigh the perfect amount. They're just that. They're immortal, wisest, fairest, and also the best, the perfect weight. That's why when they're ring bearers, it's so burdensome to them. That extra, the sheer weight of the metal of the ring makes it so that a lot of their powers are turned off.
It's not the evil of the ring, it's the ounce of the ring.
It's the actual weight of it. It is a burden. It turns off their snow walking powers, and it probably
turns encumbered.
If you've watched the Hobbit trilogy, it probably turns off your jumping off of falling rocks abilities and your Tarzan sliding down the trees and stomping on spiders abilities as well.
Yeah,
so.
Surfing down, staircases.
Right. Yeah. So you know, it is a trade off for elves. Anyway, Canadian lynxes have giant, comically oversized paws to distribute their weight and act like snowshoes. They have these long black ear tufts at the ends of their pointed ears that stick up. They have a short, stubby tail, kind of like a bobcat. I don't know why I said that like a Midwesterner, like a bobcat. Everyone I work with lives in Minnesota, so it's rubbing off on me.
You just said Minnesota, sort of like it.
Minnesota, a Minnesota bobcat. The tip of the tail is dipped in it. Well, is black, so it looks like it's dipped in ink, kind of like the ear tufts. It has these long legs, and its back legs have kind of like a sloped hunch, sort of like a German Shepherd, but it's just always just ready to pounce. But it's big. It's a big cat. I mean, it's not a, like a tiger, but it's a house cat on steroids. It's a Maine Coon on steroids. But how big is it, Joe?
What a great question. Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listeners part of the show. The part of the show when we present the animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. It's also part of the show that's introduced by you. When you send an audio of yourself saying, singing, or chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com, we don't have a new measure up intro this week, but that means you get to hear from an animal and Carlos has to talk about it.
I have to talk about it? I don't even have to
you
guess.
Gotta, you have to discuss it.
I just have to yes and.
You have to yes and to this cat.
To a lynx. Is Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank a lynx?
I don't know. Without further ado, the listener's favorite part of the show. I mean, just a regular part of the show.
Yeah, don't be lying. What on earth is happening? Is this a brain rot meme? It sounds like a brain rot meme.
It sounds like a brain rot meme. It is not a lynx. It's a bobcat.
Oh, it's Bobcat Goldstein?
Goldthwaite.
Goldthwaite, or whatever, the comedian.
You know who that is.
I mean, I listened to some of his stuff, but I didn't think it was very funny, so I moved on. But
he does this many times. I only played a few, but he just comes out and did this for a while. And how can you stand it?
He's screaming.
It's annoying and also just hard to. I'm getting secondhand embarrassment from it.
Anytime a comedian does crowd work, I get secondhand embarrassment. I do not want to watch a comedian do crowd work.
Even if it's good crowd work and he's like making good jokes out of it?
Then I don't believe it. Then it's like this is all set up. If it's working really well, then it loses credibility. And if it's not going well, then I feel secondhand embarrassment. So there's no way out. It's lose-lose.
I've seen a lot of clips where they're just like, you know, showcasing a little charisma. They're not really like nailing jokes, but it's also not going poorly.
Yeah. You know? So then it's like, then it's mediocre. Just do your set.
Anyway. Yeah. That is a comedian. Bobcat Goldthwaite.
Goldthwaite.
Goldthwaite. That's hard to say. It's funny. Cause he's in this clip, he's got like long hair. He's got like this black suit with gold tassels. And then there's another video in the search of just him now or more in more modern times where he looks normal. But anyway, there's that guy. Not a real bobcat, just a guy who calls himself a bobcat.
I wonder what his actual name is.
But since this is the listeners' part of the show, this was a suggestion from Seis Nubes on YouTube, Six Clouds. And we got a comment from Stone Kite on Spotify saying it took me 2 to 3 years, but as of tonight or tomorrow, I'm finally caught up on the podcast.
Congratulations, Stone Kite. Yeah. Also, awesome name, because I'm just thinking of a dragon made of stone, and Stone Kite is a perfect name for that.
I'm thinking of a kite that you have to like swing around with a centrifugal force to
kill people to with.
Anyway, Stone Kite continues from the giant squid to the black rat. You did the golden eagle. Y'all did a lot of golden animals. And then Stone Kite gives a suggestion. Goldie's tree cobra. have fun. You've only done one cobra, so here's one in a tree.
The only thing better than a cobra is one that's already in a tree.
Honestly, that sounds terrible. A tree cobra. Imagine that falling on you.
Some of the worst snakes live in trees, like the Mamba family. Mamba number five. One through five all live in the trees.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to all the episodes, Stonecut. It's time to go back and start again. Gotta re-listen.
I can't imagine going from like one of these episodes all the way back to the Humboldt squid.
Right.
Our Humboldt beginnings.
Our Humboldt beginnings.
Have we made that joke? That's a good.
I don't know.
We'll republish that and call it our Humboldt beginnings.
We've had a couple of other suggestions on the old Spotify comment section. Some of them are of things we've done before. But if we've done it before and you've listened to it and there's more interesting facts that you want to know about, maybe we should revisit. Especially some of those like sub 100, sub 200.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of animals like especially the famous ones, like the elephant. There's so many facts that could be the major fact. So we could always revisit some of these.
Kev on Spotify also suggested the Canadian lynx and the wolverine.
We got two Canadian lynx suggestions.
Nice. Unless these are people that are on YouTube and Spotify under different names. But could be. Both people were like, I need to see a Canadian lynx episode. And here we go with that. Yeah, thanks. Leave comments anywhere you could find us. Specifically Spotify, YouTube, email, and Patreon. That's where we'll see it. There might be some obscure comment sections of obscure podcast catchers that
we don't see because we don't know them all. We're not looking at our Overcast comments.
I don't think you can do Overcast comments.
Probably not.
But let's talk about how big they are. Males are typically larger than females. Their body length is around 31 to 43 inches or 80 to 110 centimeters. Their length of their tail is 4 to 8 inches. So it is not anywhere close to the length of their body, 10 to 20 centimeters. It looks like a little stubby tail. Their shoulder height, their height at the withers, were they a fixed-spined creature, you'd say that. They're about 19 to 22 inches. Or 48 to 56 centimeters.
Okay.
So, the Bear Paw Formation is a naturally occurring geological formation known for its rich fossil content, including ammonites and marine reptiles, located in Montana, Alberta, and Saskatchewan.
Didn't the ammonites attack the Israelites before they crossed the Jordan?
Yeah. Well, that's why God encase them in the Bear Paw Formation for their sins.
Og and Magog.
Ammonites. That's what it is, right? Ammonites.
It's either Ammonites or Amalekites. I'm not sure which one, but
well, true or false, a large ammonite fossil in the Bear Paw Formation is about the same length as the height of a Canadian lynx. Do you know what an ammonite is? Besides the people group
yes,
from
an ancient,
Canaan?
Canadian warrior. No, I don't know what an ammonite is.
It's a Omanti, the Pokemon. Omanite. Looks like Omanti to me when I was a kid.
It's a Nautilus kind of thing?
It's like a Nautilus type thing.
Huh. At the withers, you said?
Yes, their height. Shoulder height.
That's pretty big. I'll take it. Yes.
22, 1-to-1?
22 inches. I guess the diameter of this Nautilus thing. So
yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The correct answer is true. A large ammonite is 40 to 60 centimeters or 16 to 24 inches.
And we also learned where the name Ammonite, the Pokemon Ammonite name, comes from.
Yeah. Which, although this is an A M.
Right. They took the creative liberty. And yes. And yeah. Link's Yuumiya. There we go. It's a liberty at the same time.
Let's talk about their weight. Females are 11 to 24 pounds or 5 to 11 kilograms, or males are 18 to 37 pounds, 8 to 17 kilograms. A cast iron Dutch oven was common in Canada in the Hudson Bay Company era from the 1600s through the 1800s on fur trading expeditions. Today, artifacts can be found around fur trading sites. True or false, a large cast iron Dutch oven from the period could be the weight of a male bobcat.
37 pounds?
37 pounds.
I mean, I guess it is a whole like Dutch oven. It's not just like a pan. Could be. Now you're adding some like variance, some conditionality to it. Of course it probably could.
Well, you could also tie like helium balloons to it and make it a little lighter.
A little lighter, but you could also put a bunch of rocks into it and make it a lot heavier.
I'm cooking rocks.
I think it's heavier. No, I think it's pounds, heavier. If it was any more than like, I mean, 50 pounds, you would have a pretty hard time moving that thing around. Yeah, it's the same. I'll say it's the same.
You're saying true?
Yeah, cast iron, a Hudson Bay cast iron from 1910 times. It's close to 40 pounds, yeah.
More like 1800s times. But the correct answer is true. Large, nice, historic camp cookware pieces can weigh 30 to 40 pounds for cast iron pot.
And Sam carried that all the way to Mount Doom.
That wasn't a Dutch oven. That was just a cast iron pan.
Still. Is heavy stuff. he carried it with the power of his character. He carried that
in the snow.
And he carried the movie. Yeah,
he did not. He did not carry the movie. No, a lot of guys worked really hard on the movie.
Nope. The linchpin is Sam. He's the keystone species for the movie. You remove him, you remove the heart, and you don't have a movie anymore.
Well, that's all I got for that. Do you have any fast facts before getting to the major fact?
I do. So, as the name and nomenclature slightly hint at, this the Canadian lynx lives in Canada, but it also lives in Alaska and dips into the northern United States in places like Montana, Minnesota, and even Maine. If it's cold and snowy, they love it. They like these thick boreal forests with spruce and fir, conifer trees. If you're surrounded by Christmas trees, you might also be surrounded by lynx. Probably not. They eat almost exclusively snowshoe hares. Not casually, not occasionally. This is ride or die levels of culinary commitment. And I'll leave that at that. They are solitary. They are stealthy. They are ambush predators because hares are, they're fast and wary. So you got to be able to.
Hairy and
they're
wary.
Hairy and wary. They're hairy. You're a wizard, Harry.
Harry and the Hendersons. And
you're a Harry wizard. I've never seen Harry and the Hendersons. When I was a kid, that looked terrifying. Better. What?
White Fang's better. You might as well watch White Fang.
What does White Fang and Harry and... What do White Fang and Harry and the Hendersons have to do with each other?
They both have the scene where the human character uses tough love to try to get the animal like, character
go on,
to
get
go away.
Yeah, like
we don't,
the,
can't you see we don't want you no more?
The lassie or the old Yeller crying. Thing. Okay. The thing I when I think of Harry and the Hendersons, I think of Alf more than anything else. But definitely don't think of White Fang. So for the lynx, the breeding season hits in late winter. The gestation is about 63 to 70 days, and they have a litter of 1 to 4 kittens. They can live for up to 15 years in the wild, even longer in captivity, because they're being fed regularly. And they're pretty solitary. Like I said, they don't really only get together during mating season or when raising kittens. They have all kinds of weird cat sounds. I live in Jacksonville. We have a cat problem. It seems like no matter where you go, there's a bunch of wild cats. Not wild cats, but stray cats. And just yesterday, I was working here on my laptop, and I thought that there were children dying outside my window. And I just came out and looked like, who's hurt? And it's just cats being mean to each other. Cats make the weirdest sounds.
They do.
But yeah, they have yowls and growls and meows and blood-curdling screams. And they can do everything from sound like they're saying something to you in English to sounding like dial-up internet. So the wide range of vocal talent. They are not apex predators in their environment. They need to keep an eye out for wolves, cougars, and humans. Humans hunt them for their meat and fur. Kittens have to keep an eye out for owls and birds of prey. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I'm calling this major fact. Hares eat lynx? Question mark. Canadian lynx, they're considered a specialist predator, as opposed to a generalist. Meaning they are adapted to eat one particular thing. And in this case, it is snowshoe hares, as we've been alluding to. But they're so... You don't think of that like you think of a mammalian predator like a bear or even a wolf. They just take what they can get. Mm-hmm. But these guys eat so many hares that it's 60 to 90% of their diet across most of their range. So they need them bunnies.
They love the bunny.
They love the bunny. The bunny. They're physically adapted to hunting them. They're so as specialists often are. Their bodies tell you what they eat. They have those large paws for deep snow, excellent hearing, stealthy movements. They have a longer back legs than they have front legs, which gives them this bounding gait, which is great for strong propulsion in the snow. So they are perfect ambush style predators for prey, which is fast. So a bunny, a hare is fast. And they're built to catch them. And they get those large ears with the black tufts. And I was trying to find like, do the black tufts actually do anything? But I don't know. They did, but their ears are they can detect faint rustling under the snow, locate hidden or hairs that aren't in movement, and they pinpoint direction in dense forest. So they're great at stealth, but they're also great at detecting. They're predators. They're seeing in that infrared.
These hares just need to put mud on their bodies and they'll be invisible.
But they're so connected, hares, snowshoe hares and Canadian lynx, that scientists study populations together and try to, and they can even predict, this one's going down, the other one's going down. But in certain areas in Canada, in the Hudson's Bay area, it has led to something called the hares eat lynx paradox.
The hares eat the lynx. It's a bizarro world for them.
It's a bizarro world. The numbers, what do they mean?
Amazing.
The hares eat lynx paradox refers to an anomalous pattern of observation in historic Hudson's Bay Company fur trading records for snowshoe hares and Canadian lynx pelts. In classical predator-prey theory, the predator population should peak after the prey population. In other words, the prey population hits its like most numerous, and then the predator population follows. They'll hit their most numerous. And then once, so basically abundant prey allows predators to thrive and reproduce, leading to a lag where lynx numbers rise following a hare boom and decline after a hare crash.
After hare loss.
After hair loss. But in portions of the pelt data, particularly in analysis from the 19th to the 20th century, early 19th to the 20th century. No, 19th to early 20th century, the 1910 times. The peak in lynx pelts is often leading the peak in hare pelts, meaning lynx harvests appear to peak before hare harvests. And this reversal suggests absurdly that the hares are somehow controlling or eating the lynx population. Hence the hares eat lynx nomenclature for this paradox. But don't worry, there's not actually lynxes eating hares.
Lynxes eating hares.
There's not actually hares eating lynxes. The paradox was found in ecological and highlighted in ecological literature, including the 1973 article by a guy named Michael Gilpin, titled provocatively, "Do Hares Eat Lynx?" Which
it's clickbait. Popularized
this phrase. It challenged the direct application of this, the predator-prey model that is so often used. And the pelt numbers were assumed to be like set in stone, but the problem with this data is later research in 2018 resolved the hares eat lynx paradox by showing that human trappers selectively harvest.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah,
our science is based off of collected pelts for profit,
driven by higher value of lynx pelts.
Yeah,
yeah. So it distorted the records, creating the apparent reversal, while wild populations followed the classical patterns. So
someone was not using Occam's razor there.
Well, I guess what was confusing them is that the pelt data usually followed natural data like that we can observe today. And but there was just a period of time where it's like, what the heck is going on here? The hares are eating the lynx here. What's going on? But it was just that, I guess, lynx values went up that during that time.
I just like the idea that it's like a subordinate comes up and says, sir, we, for the first time ever, we have more lynx pelts than hare pelts. Do you think it's because maybe we're harvesting more lynx pelts than hare pelts? No. The hares must be eating the lynxes.
No, but here's the thing. Nobody actually thought the hares were eating the lynxes. No.
But the hares must be like outnumbering, or the lynxes must be outnumbering their prey.
It was a mystery in the data that probably people thought there was some like economic reason for it.
It was 1910 times. We had invented economics, but not science yet.
Yeah, but the hares eats lynx paradox is an interesting way to learn about the truth, the non paradox, which is the fact that in closely related predator prey relationships. The predator follows the prey. So if there's a ton of food for hares to eat, there's a ton of hares, and then there was a ton of lynx. But because there's a ton of lynx, the lynx eat a ton of hares, and then the population of hares goes down, and then the population of lynx goes down. So there's this delicate balance, a circle of life, that can be seen with just two species and plants. And this is true of, in certain areas, wolves and deer. And it's what a keystone species is based on. Like, if you remove that species, you ruin the balance. So it's an interesting way to learn about it. Hares eat lynx. The fact that we killed a bunch of wolves, now we have to hunt deer because there's nothing controlling them except for us and the availability of grass. But yeah, it's a delicate balance.
Yes. I'm trying to find a good analogy, but I can't. It's like, nope, I don't have one. If you remove all the pizza from an area, the people leave too.
If you remove all the pizza from a youth group.
Yes, if you stop having fellowship meals, your attendance drops.
Yeah, but the problem is...
if your attendance drops, then your tithes drop. And if your tithes drop, then you can't pay for fellowship meals.
Yeah, but in this case, it would be if your attendance drops, the pizza population goes out of control.
Then it's cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
You need teenagers to control the pizza population. The pizza population. Or else pizza goes wild. And then the stuff that the pizza eats gets decimated.
Which is...
mozzarella sticks.
It eats my muscle, my muscle definition and my motivation to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
It feeds on every happy thought and memory. It's a Dementor. We just went over the Dementors not too long ago.
And if you look back in the records, sometimes it seems like the pizza eats the teenagers.
So we need to have more kids for the pizza to eat.
Exactly.
Got it. I read that it was like a pretty consistent 10-year cycle of boom and bust for these populations. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. It's like it was the 20s for the lynx and hares. A tale as old as time. Cat and mouse. Okay. That was the Canadian Lynx. For you out there in Podcastia, be a solitary Sigma. Walk across the snow like a Mirkwood elven princeling. And fluctuate your population numbers based on the availability of your favorite food, like having more kids because there's more pizza in the world, like the Canadian Lynx here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Hey, Taxonomy Titans, I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
My favorite in the world podcast.
The pizza numbers are out of control. We have to have more kids.